Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
Think back to your best year in school. Chances are you had an extraordinary teacher, somebody with deep knowledge of the material you were learning and a passionate commitment to sharing it with you. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. What if you or your kids or every kid could have had a teacher like that for every subject in every grade? It's easy to imagine the American education system could be transformed. But there's a problem. Our culture doesn't always give teaching the respect it deserves. So some people who might be great at it end up choosing other careers instead. And after years of feeling undervalued, underpaid, and overworked, some devoted and gifted teachers call it quits mid-career. That adds up to a shortage of the best and brightest in our classrooms, especially those filled with the highest need students. Joining us to discuss the problem and the potential solutions are three guests who are very familiar with what's at stake. John Gasco is Dean of the School of Education at the University of North Texas, Dallas. Ivan Duran is Deputy Superintendent of the Dallas Independent School District. Kelly Kovacic is Director of the Regional Initiatives for the Commit Partnership. And they join us this hour as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. Welcome all of you to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kelly, we'll start with you. We've arrived at this moment when the demand for teachers is growing and the number of Texas college students graduating with education degrees is shrinking every year. First of all, why do we keep needing more teachers every year?
So I think that what we're seeing, and a lot of this is based off of research that we are looking at nationally, but also we were very fortunate in the Dallas region to have Bain and Company help us with a very specific study focused on what we're seeing here in the Dallas-Fort Worth region. And what we see is a declining number of students that are interested in the teaching profession, and then as teachers enter into the profession, that many of them are leaving very early in their careers. And we think there's a couple key drivers to this. One is just that as the economy is improving, there becomes a need to make even more clear and compelling why teaching both is such an important profession, a transformative profession, but also one that allows students to really sort of stretch their abilities to be creative, to work in ways that are entrepreneurial and innovative. I think we're also finding that as teachers enter the profession, that a number of them are entering feeling unprepared, unprepared to teach the curriculum and the standards that are required, but also unprepared to deal with the multiple different stresses that come with being on the job. And so what's particularly exciting here in Dallas is the work that John's doing over at UNT Dallas, the work that Ivan and the Dallas ISD team are doing, and the work we're seeing across a number of our districts and teacher prep programs are specifically trying to address how do we ensure our teachers are the most prepared when they enter on day one, and then how do we ensure that they are able to continue to feel like they can be developed and thrive in that profession once they start.
Ivan, some people who have looked at this problem note that efforts to give us the best teaching workforce we can possibly have tend to focus on teachers who are already working. What kind of career, you know, postgraduate teaching can we give them? Is that too late?
I don't think it's too late, but I do think it's very important that we start from the beginning with preparing teachers to really understand the challenges they're going to face when they come into the education field. You know, it's changed so much over the years, and you know, in our high-need schools, we're seeing that challenge even greater where, you know, students are coming with a variety of issues and needs. And I don't think teachers are being prepared in a way to really understand the complexities that they're going to face. And so we really want to see that from the very beginning. But I think with the mid-year teachers, I do think there's still a lot of opportunity to provide professional development and really help them understand just how they can better relate and connect with students, because ultimately that's why we're all there.
It's interesting, John, to think about students who enter and want to do an education degree and they come straight out of high school, because on the one hand, they're really familiar with what life is like in schools. Do they have an accurate sense of what they will need to learn in order to be good teachers?
I think it depends. Many students come to the discernment of whether or not they want to be teachers based upon their own experience. And so there are a variety of students who probably, based upon their own pathways in school, may not ever consider teaching as a viable path. And so But we want to change that narrative. And certainly there are those who have had exceptional experiences. And I think we have to go to them and go really expose teaching as the call of a lifetime, sort of an epic adventure. You know, students today want to have adventure. And if you really want adventure, teaching is the path. And so some of the work that we want to do, particularly in South Dallas, is to go on tour, to go to high schools, to talk to students about teaching is a calling, and it's somewhat of a sacred calling because they will be entrusted with the lives of young people for lots of time. And so going to schools, really creating some excitement, some buzz, and bringing people who have a lot to say about the profession to give them hope and really help build their imaginations, I think is key.
I was surprised to learn that a lot of college undergraduates don't consider the education track to be particularly challenging. Like, they think if you're not so great at school, study to be a teacher. That perception took me by surprise.
So I remember coming off of an airplane recently over at Love Field, and there was a big billboard that was up on the wall of Dallas Love Field, or the terminal as you were walking through, and it says, "Want to teach? Start today." And I think that mantra is one that we need to make sure that we really underscore that teaching is not easy. It's not something that you can wake up tomorrow and walk into a classroom and be able to engage and connect with students without any preparation or training. And so I think that it's critically important, and it's certainly the dialogue that we are actively having here in Dallas amongst our teacher preparation programs, amongst our districts, which is how do we ensure that we create pathways that are seamless and easy for our students in terms of being able to matriculate through high school, community college, to a four-year program or to an alternative prep program, but do so in a way that's making sure that they're also incredibly well-prepared. And so when they walk into that classroom with 30 students who are coming with a variety of needs, with a variety of different challenges and opportunities that face them, that they feel like they're incredibly well-equipped, and that is not something that is simple or easy. As somebody who taught for many, many years, high school and middle school, what I will say to everybody is that it will always be the most complex job I ever did. And it takes incredible skill and incredible discipline in terms of being able to do it well, and yet we've got tremendous ability to support our teachers, and they really are doing hero's work every day.
But do I have this right, Ivan? More than half of the teachers in classrooms in public schools in Dallas County have gone through the alternative certification program rather than coming to the job with education degrees.
Yeah, there is a large number of teachers that are choosing to go into alternative certification programs. And I think on one hand, it gives people that have had some kind of career experience, you know, content knowledge, you know, the opportunity to be able to, you know, think about a career in education. But I think the issue or challenge with that is that oftentimes, you know, someone may know their content really well, but the idea of actually delivering that information and interacting with students and really helping students find passion around that subject is a whole nother conversation, a whole nother challenge that we face. And then I think as teachers enter into the classroom, you know, I think at one time in education there was this belief that, you know, the sage on the stage was kind of the model of what we wanted to see. But that has changed so much now to where we want students working together. We want students problem solving. We want students thinking about big issues that are going on in our society. And teachers really play a critical role in generating those ideas and those conversations. So I think it's important that teachers really are trained really well to make sure that they can have those experiences from the very first day.
One of the things, Chris, that we saw in the Bain report that we did in terms of what are we seeing as a trend here in Dallas County is that we are seeing a decline in the number of students that are interested in education. But of those that are interested in education, a number of them are going through alternative prep programs. However, what seems to be what makes the biggest difference is, do they have clinical experience prior to day one? So prior to walking in, being what we call the teacher of record, having responsibility for the 30-plus students that you're teaching, or the 20-plus students that you're teaching, have you had the opportunity to work with an experienced teacher? Have you had clinical experience to be able to get feedback, to be trained? And we're finding that a lot of our students that are going through are getting that clinical experience before becoming teachers, but those that aren't are the ones that are struggling the most. And so a lot of our focus here in Dallas County and in Tarrant County is, how do we ensure that every single teacher prior to beginning on day one has clinical experience that is robust, that is meaningful, that provides them with the experience to feel well prepared.
Can really good, you know, training and education make anybody an effective teacher? Or is there some kind of special sauce, some temperament, some kind of motivation that maybe some of us have and some of us don't?
Absolutely. I believe there's always something to be said for people who have natural gifts and tendencies, but training is really a big part of the solution. However, it's got to be the right kind of training. For example, I think for too long, we focused too much on the cognitive and intellectual preparation of our candidates and made teaching really anchored in the mind. And what we're finding, building upon what Kelly said, is we've got to extend that life of the mind into the life of practice and give teachers regular and recurring clinical exposure to the reality of what they'll face when they enter the classroom. But recently, and what we're finding now, is that we also need to do an exceptional job in educating their emotions. Because you no doubt have heard that a lot of teachers are burning out, they're high stressed. And so for a long time, we've just not paid attention to that. We've left that up to them. So how do we really help a young person or somebody coming into the profession as a second career really understand how to draw on their own inner technology, their own inner resources to be able to be resilient in the face of adversity? And I think if we pay attention to that kind of education, that our teachers will not only be more effective, but they will stay in the classroom longer.
It's interesting that you note, John, that maybe we have focused too much on the cognitive preparation of incoming teachers. So many people love to point to, you know, Finland and South Korea, places where it's really hard to get into, you know, an education program at a university, and it is considered really prestigious. They are like the top performing students among all students across all degree programs in their universities. Is there evidence that in this country, being a better student, graduating from college with a higher GPA, makes one a more effective teacher?
So I think that that's research that we're continuing to look more deeply into. I wouldn't say that we've got a clear sense yet as to exactly sort of if you perform in the top third in high school, does that then set you up to be a better teacher? What we are finding, however, is that definitely we are not currently attracting that top third of students. And so we want to, and today we're launching our major campaign here in the Dallas region called Teach DFW, is we want to be attracting more of our highly talented, highly qualified students, whether they're in high school or college, into the profession. I think what we do see from programs that tend to have very strong track records is that they have a very clear, rigorous way in which they attract students into their programs. John can speak a little bit more about this at UNT Dallas in particular, but we find that those programs that are graduating cohorts, and those cohorts of students are going on to be teachers with longer 10 years than coming out of other programs, they've done a lot on the front end to determine what are the attributes that those students are walking in with that makes them more likely to be successful once they come into the classroom when you add on top of that a really strong preparation experience.
Yeah. And John and I were recently on a learning experience in Singapore. And, you know, Singapore is a fascinating country because
that's another word people talk about.
Exactly. Yeah. Very often. And, you know, they do a phenomenal job in terms of recruiting their teachers and training their teachers. But what struck me is the way that Singapore has changed over the years is that initially it was a really big focus on that content, the intellectual, and really doing well on assessments. And, you know, recently now they really are looking at students from that whole child perspective. And so their whole teacher preparation program has revamped to think about not only around what does a student need to know and be able to do to, you know, be successful in the world, but also that affective side of both the teachers and the students. And that to me is just a good example that it's a combination of both that we need to still continue to pursue.
We're talking this hour about teacher shortages and recruiting and retaining the best. You just heard Ivan Duran, who's deputy superintendent of DISD. John Gasco is here as well, dean of the School of Education at the University of North Texas, Dallas. And Kelly Kovacic, who is director of regional initiatives for the Commit Partnership. We'll be back in 2 minutes. We'll be right back.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering courses in art, literature, film, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about closing the student achievement gap by eliminating teacher shortages. My guests for the hour are Kelly Kovacic, who is Director of Regional Initiatives for the Commit Partnership, John Gasco, Dean of the School of Education at the University of North Texas, Dallas, and Ivan Duran, Deputy Superintendent of the Dallas Independent School District. If you'd like to join this conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. To what extent is the lack of prestige assigned to teaching in our culture about the fact that in the United States, for the past century, teaching has primarily been a job that women did?
I would like to directly respond to that. I think back to what Ivan talked about with Singapore. Literally, this is a nation, because it has no natural resources, has made its people its most precious resource, and the fabric of their national identity revolves around teachers. And so I think in this country, we've got some great rhetoric. We have a lot of talk about what it means to be a citizen. But the way in which we talk about teaching historically really has not been where it needs to be to make it truly a part of our national identity in the same way it's happened elsewhere. I do think that some of the people who have given their blood, sweat, and tears over time to this profession have been people who have been historically marginalized. It's not only limited to women, nuns, the people of color. Historically, education has been closely coupled with civil rights movement and struggle. So because teaching really is the heartbeat of America, it's bound up in these larger conversations about rights. And so I think for a lot of people, especially those who like to bash the profession and blame teachers, it's a deeper issue than just teaching and learning. In fact, it's connected to politically volatile issues that have been with us for a long time.
Yeah, and I would say even in Dallas, and the majority of our teaching staff are females, you know, but I think that there still is that historical connotation that, you know, that's who it was for the field. But nowadays, I think that the need to have a really diverse teaching staff is just really critical. And even in my own education experience, when I was in college, I was one of, you know, 25, you know, teachers, and I was the only male, you know, in those classrooms. So it was always a challenge, and, you know, people always question. But I think that going back to, you know, what's the reason why people want to get into the field and why they want to teach? Because I think if you ask most teachers who are either retired or in the field now, they do see themselves in that noble purpose, that they are doing, you know, really important work. And that's what we want to continue to emphasize, to make sure that we're supporting them to be successful.
I think we also tend to, as a society, while we fundamentally understand the importance of teachers, I think that we also tend to create a narrative of teacher as martyr versus teacher as professional. So I remember very distinctly being in high school and having that conversation with my parents about, what do you want to do with the rest of your life? And my dad saying, you know, why would you want to be a teacher? Why wouldn't you want to be an attorney or a doctor or an engineer? And so I think there's such an important need to really just change how we talk about and think about teaching. It's not a profession that just anybody can do, and yet it's a profession that we've all experienced because we've all gone through the schooling system. And so I think that a big part of this is, again, not just how we speak about it as a narrative, but how do we just make sure that we understand that the skill it takes to teach is probably as complex as the skill it takes to be an engineer or the skill it takes to be a doctor. And while my dad came around to recognizing the incredible gift that he had in seeing me go on to teach, I think that, you know, every day when I wake up thinking about this topic, I really think about how do we just shift how we think about the talent that's needed to teach extraordinarily well and in ways that will touch the lives of students who, to John's point, this was a system that was not designed to serve all students. When you look back at the history of education, it was not designed to be a pathway to equity and prosperity for all. And so in some ways, we're also still in the process process as a nation of trying to transform a system that was not set up for all students. And that's sort of the work we try to do every day, but is certainly challenging, particularly when the narrative isn't that teaching is as prestigious and as hard as being a doctor or being a lawyer or being an engineer.
If we understand, and this sounds rather cold, but let's just say there's a percentage of incredibly well-qualified, really gifted teachers, and a percentage who are doing their very best and are adequate but are not that top tier. Should we divide out the top tier so that every campus has an equal share of them commensurate to the number of students, or should we send those very best teachers to the schools that are serving the most challenged students?
I think it's a combination. I think we need to do both. But in Dallas in particular, one of the things that we started up was called ACE, Accelerating Campus Excellence. And we did that second thing. We basically created a process and system so that we took our best teachers and encouraged them and incentivized those to go to some of our most struggling schools. What we have seen in Dallas, and I'm sure it's true for the Dallas County, is that our schools that have some of the highest needs also have some of the newest teachers and the least experienced teachers and the teachers who have not been as effective. And so ACE started up 2 years ago, and at that time, only less than 24% of the teachers in those seven schools were rated as effective. So it was a very, very small number. So the ACE program was an opportunity for us to recruit teachers and incentivize them to go to the schools. We gave them a really nice incentive, $12,000, to go for the year. But we also encouraged them to go in teams. We wanted to see them go from a school where they were having success and classroom experience into another school where there was not as much success. And the great thing about it is that over the last year, we saw some really phenomenal outcomes from those schools. Six of the seven schools came off the IR list, that the state has. And, many of the schools had double-digit gains. And, my perspective now and reflection is that when I think about the experiences that students were able to have, you just can't measure that, So I definitely believe that we have to figure out ways to inspire and encourage our best teachers to go and want to work in some of our most struggling schools. And ACE is one way that we're doing it in Dallas.
The question, Chris, that you asked is one that we're thinking a lot about at Commit, in particular when we look at what are the trends we're seeing across the Dallas-Fort Worth region, but what are also the trends we're seeing across Texas as a whole. And I think there's three key trends that are very concerning to us. So one is that the poorer the school, the more likely that school is to have a higher percentage of beginning teachers, first-year teachers. That's then coupled with the poorer the school, the more likely that their teacher turnover rate is higher than the average across that district or county. And then the third is that the poorer the school, the higher the percentage of beginning teachers that have no clinical experience. So what we're finding, in essence, is that our schools that are serving are students that have some of the greatest challenges that they're having to overcome because of the poverty that they're living in, that they are going into school every day with incredibly caring, well-intended teachers, but teachers who haven't necessarily been as prepared or are able to really be able to look to experienced teachers around them to continue to grow and learn. And so programs like ACE are incredibly important because what they do are ensure that we're not just talking about equality. How do we make sure every school looks the same? But we're talking about equity. How do we understand what students are coming in with, what their differentiated needs are, and then ensuring that our students that come in with the greatest needs have the teachers with the greatest amount of experience and talent, and that those teachers are then supported in cohorts so that they themselves, to the earlier conversation, feel emotionally supported to do this work.
I think there's a lot of competition for talent. So for the top third in our country, everybody is doing their best to recruit them. I think that speaking about talent, we've got to think a bit differently about it. In South Dallas, at UNT Dallas in particular, there are a lot of students who have gone through an awful lot in their experience to just make it to a higher education. And what we found is the gifts that they bring as a result of the challenges they've had to surmount or really give them a leg up on a lot of people. And so while I do think that we need to seek intellectually gifted students, for example, and adults to go into the profession and remain, I think that there are other gifts and traits associated with going through difficult life experiences that make you more emotionally resilient and give you a better way to identify with the struggles that the students are facing. And at UNT Dallas, that's what we've seen in terms of trying to identify the best talent to go into the profession.
All right, let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Brad calling from Dallas. Hi, Brad.
Hi. So I am a teacher. I've been teaching for 16 years here in the Metroplex area. And I've found 2 years ago I was ready to quit. I was so frustrated with everything having to do with it. And 2 years ago I ended up moving to a private school here in Dallas. And it's been a completely different world, and in a good way. But I found this in talking about recruiting teachers, I think a bigger problem than just recruiting people into the profession is keeping people there. Because what I found is the good teachers are just getting so incredibly frustrated with the bureaucracy of the district, with the heavy emphasis on standardized tests that almost stifled the creativity of some of the better teachers that you have. And then just the pay. The pay is, my wife has been in her industry for 10 years. I've been in mine for 16, and she makes almost twice as much as I do. And so I think that's a huge problem in just recruiting people right out of college.
Yeah, and I would definitely hear that and understand that. You know, we definitely want to keep teachers in the field. And so I think there's two things. One is that I think that we really want to see our teachers emphasize and focus on the standards. I mean, that's what we really encourage our teachers to know, the standards that we want students to know and be able to do. And, you know, it's my belief that if teachers are, working with students and helping them understand those standards, they'll do well on the standardized assessments that are out there. But I think in terms of teacher pay, the thing that we're doing in Dallas is that we have created a teacher excellence initiative. And on that salary structure, we basically have gone away from the single step, based on years in terms of experience to be able to try to recruit and keep teachers. And so a starting teacher in Dallas ISD will be starting somewhere in the neighborhood about $50,000, which is, a little bit higher than some of the other areas that are close to us. And then through the teacher effectiveness model, teachers have the ability to earn additional funds based on how well they do and how well they move through the effectiveness level. So, and that is based off of not just test scores, it's based off of student achievement, it's based off their classroom instructional practices, and it's based off of surveys that students complete in order to give perceptions around how they think their teachers are doing. So teachers in Dallas have the opportunity to actually, earn, money faster than what they would do in a traditional single steps system that's set up in most school districts. And so we see that as a really key way for us to recruit and keep our teachers.
You're listening to Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about closing the student achievement gap by eliminating teacher shortages. And just to follow up on the call that we just heard from Brad, I've never met a teacher who didn't say they could use more money. I've also never met a teacher who said, I'm in this for the money. What are the other working conditions that, they've lived with a really modest salary for 16 years. What are the other working conditions that either make or break a teacher's desire to stick with the profession?
I think we're seeing increasing amounts of young people coming to the classroom and their educational experience manifesting levels of trauma we've not necessarily seen before. The challenge of that is that in preparation, we continue largely to maintain pretty traditional approaches to thinking about managing classrooms, and teachers aren't necessarily being equipped with the mindsets and the skills needed to work with children who are experiencing trauma.
Hang on a second. This is really interesting, and I want to just pull you off the euphemisms. Are you saying that in the past, teachers were basically trained to assume that all their students would be well-fed middle-class kids?
I think there is some of that, but that narrative has certainly changed over the past few decades. In fact, we are seeing a lot of students who struggle characterized as at risk and vulnerable, but the stresses that families face continue to escalate, and that's passed down to the child, and that comes to the classroom. And so we know that burnout and teacher stress continues to be an epidemic. Teaching continues to be among the highest high-stress occupations in America, next to nursing and being a physician. And so teachers come out, and no matter even how well they've been prepared, they face this enormous churn and this ocean of need with young people whose needs are so significant. It's largely, you know, there is a lot that they can do, but there's a lot of things they can't do. And so what we're finding the need to do now to stabilize the level of turnover that we're seeing, and we've started here recently in Dallas, is to really work with teachers around this sort of metaphorical IV that they're carrying with them all day. That's a slow drip chronic stress problem, and stress is a killer. And we know that. And so how do we, not only through efforts to build the identity and the nobility of teaching to compensate them effectively, but really equip them to really withstand all the sort of you know, demands on them that the profession will make in terms of their wellness.
Kelly, another negative that a lot of incoming teachers cite, or young teachers cite, is the idea that there will be no career advancement, that if you're the best third grade teacher ever, you will be the best third grade teacher ever in 40 years when it's time to retire. Knowing that not everybody wants to go into administration, and there are only so many positions anyway, what do we do about that?
I think it's a great point. And what we found when we surveyed 2,200 teachers across Dallas and Fort Worth as part of our study was that actually salary was not a primary driver of turnover, interestingly enough. And I think it's for a lot of the reasons you mentioned, that people want to be compensated well. They actually are surprised in Dallas how high a starting salary is for a teacher here, which is very competitive. But they want to feel like they can grow in the profession. And so what we are finding, I think, nationally, and we have some districts that we can look to that are doing this really well to learn from. I think DISD is a leader in this, is how do we create distributed leadership roles? How do we create career advancement opportunities that allow teachers to take on more responsibility without having to completely leave the classroom? So we see models where you allow teachers to become hybrid roles, where they're teaching part of the time, they're coaching part of the time, they're providing peer feedback and assistance to newer teachers on their campus, and it doesn't just become an add-on, which I think can too often happen.
Right. In addition to teaching,
in addition
all day, right,
to teaching your six periods of social studies or teaching a full day of a second grade classroom, you are now also doing that. It's actually built into the system. And so I think the other thing that struck me as the caller was sharing his own experience, which I think is all too common and one we hear very often, is that part of what we are trying to really focus on is that there is not a silver bullet solution to the recruitment or the retention, that it's an integrated approach that we need to take, and that it's going to require federal, state, and local changes working together to figure out how to ensure that we can do this better.
We're talking about attracting and retaining really high-quality teachers with three guests this hour, Kelly Kovacic, John Gasco, and Ivan Duran. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, find us on Twitter at KERAThink, or email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering courses in art, literature, film, history, and languages, as well as professional certificates and test preparation. Registration online at smu.edu/CAPE.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. We're talking this hour about closing the student achievement gap by eliminating teacher shortages as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. My guests today are Ivan Duran, who's Deputy Superintendent of the Dallas Independent School District, John Gasco, Dean of the School of Education at the University of North Texas, Dallas, and Kelly Kovacic, Director of Regional Initiatives for the Commit Partnership. You can join us at 800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. Let's go next on the phone to Alexis in Denton. Hi, Alexis.
Hi. Thank you guys so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm so excited.
Welcome.
I was actually wondering, whenever you guys were talking about closing the teacher shortage gap, and then specifically with low-income schools, how do programs and companies such as Teach for America factor into that? I know that they're essentially like contracting agencies to lower-income schools and can do a lot of good, but they can appear to be short term. And so I was wondering how that factors into the issue you guys are talking about.
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And again, it's one that as we're looking deeper at the data, specifically the data here in Texas and in Dallas and Fort Worth region, we're trying to better understand. What we are very focused on is getting a much clearer understanding of how do we assess the quality of preparation that a teacher has coming through a particular program. So whether it's an alt cert, whether it's a traditional four-year program, I think that we actually see a lot of variance across program types. And so the question that we're really trying to unpack and understand is whether you're going through Teach for America or a UNT Dallas or an Urban Teachers, how is it that we ensure that you come out feeling incredibly well prepared? And so have worked with the survey data that we've received to better understand what are teachers saying that they need most to walk into that classroom on day one and feel well equipped. And it's things like clinical experience. It's do you have the chance to practice teaching before you actually become the teacher? What sort of mentorship and ongoing coaching do you get during your first year as a student teacher or your first year on the job? And so I'd say that while we certainly want to better understand program by program what we're seeing in terms of outcomes, we also are trying to do a much better job articulating what are the inputs that are most important and sort of most predictable to ensure that teachers leave their preparation program being well prepared. The other piece I'd just like to add quickly is I think that it also has to do with the hiring practices that we see from our districts. And so one of the things that we know both here in our county, but also more broadly across the nation, is that the earlier that districts are able to hire, the more likely they are to hire teachers coming from programs who feel more prepared. And so we're also trying to really help our districts figure out how can they identify their teacher needs earlier in the school year and hire earlier by June, ideally, so that they're not at the end of the summer trying to hire a large number of teachers that more likely will come through lower quality programs.
All right, let's go back to the phones. This time we'll speak with Sean in Dallas. Hi, Sean.
Hi. I had interviewed some people that had come out of a couple programs, one over at SMU and in another local college, and what I found out was that, they had absolutely just about zero training in dealing with kids with disabilities. And, you know, with so many kids having learning disabilities, you know, about 15%, it was just remarkable to me that that the schools were not teaching to this and or even on a certification exam, teacher certification exam, they didn't have that. Any questions pertaining to that? And what I do know as a parent is some of the skills that I learned to work with my child that's autistic, and mostly in the way of being able to grab her attention and motivate her, were a lot of the same skills that teachers need for their regular students. So,
well, Sean, thank you so much for your call. And I think Sean's call, you know, points to the fact that teachers have to have such a wide variety of skills. So, you know, we as parents have to learn how to deal with our own kids, particularly those who might have disabilities. Teachers have such a vast array of personalities and needs in a classroom, even one where the ratio is like 1 to 15 or 1 to 20.
In response to the caller, he highlights a really important issue in that there are a lot of students who have disabilities and needs that we need to be prepared to address. A lot of programs, I believe, have mobilized to try to be more responsive in how to do that. We've got some really terrific work that's happened as a result of the hard work of parents and advocates. There's a framework that's sort of common terminology in schools called response to intervention, which is thinking about students from a variety of different tiers or needs. One of the things that we've done at the University of North Texas at Dallas for all of our teacher candidates is we've trained all of them, and we continue to do so from the lens of exceptional needs. And so our teachers are not given just a generic way to think about how to deal with the variety of need that they'll find in the classroom, but really giving them exceptional exposure to different ways to think about students with a variety of needs and make sure that before they leave, they have a strong ability to differentiate according to the different needs of the student. And I think this narrative is catching fire. But there's also things that we're discovering that regardless of the framework and regardless of the practice, it's really hard to address. And in particular, some of the more acute aspects of, for example, the autism spectrum. We need continued research and continued collaboration between universities, schools, parents and families, and community-based organizations to continue to think, how can we stay on the cutting edge of serving those needs?
And I think you can even add on to that list special education to English as a second language and how students acquire language to the role of technology in education. So in Dallas, you know, when we receive new teachers in, you know, part of our responsibility is try to provide as much professional development for them also. And so there's new teacher training that teachers go through, you know, so we try to create opportunities for them to get face-to-face experiences. We have a whole robust online set of tools that they can go and do webinars and different types of classes. And then as well as our partnerships with universities and other local institutions really help. The challenge is that as soon as teachers come into the field, you know, they come in day one and they're trying to get ready for lessons and trying to prepare and do everything that's required to be a teacher, and then they need to go to training on top of that, you know. So I think we definitely can do a lot more work to do it, you know, better in the beginning so that teachers have a much wider experience when they're in college and universities.
I want to underscore one thing Ivan mentioned about the partnerships, which is traditionally what we've seen is that teachers are trained in their preparation programs, and there is a silo that has traditionally existed between the preparation programs and the districts. One of the changes that we're seeing here in the Dallas County and the Tarrant County region and across the state, and I actually think UNT Dallas and DISD are a good model of this, is we're seeing much tighter partnerships between districts and preparation programs. So to the question your last caller asked, if there is a need that a district is seeing in how their teachers are coming in unable or ill-equipped to address a particular set of concerns that are arising in the classroom, traditionally that information wouldn't get passed along to the preparation program necessarily in a way that was quickly actionable. Just a couple weeks ago, I was sitting at a conference with John, with a member of the senior team of the HR department from DISD, and they were talking collectively about what are we seeing in our classrooms, what are we seeing in our student teachers, what do we need to strengthen together, and those are regular ongoing meetings that are happening in a formal way to ensure that there is a deep communication between the district and a deep partnership between the district and the prep programs. And I think that can have a very transformative impact in how quickly we're able to assure teachers are prepared for the types of experiences they're going to see in the classrooms.
So I know we're talking about shortage today, so this question might seem odd, but in every workplace, there are apt to be a few people who are just done. They are burned out sort of beyond the point that any kind of assistance or training can pull them back. Is it too hard to remove teachers who are not, you know, absolutely negligent in their duties but have lost that spark? And would we be better off finding, you know, being a little more selective about renewing contracts?
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, that I think a number of our teachers that may be having that experience or may not want to continue education, you know, my sense has always been that they're going to be in the classroom for a while. So first and most important thing is finding out what is going on with that teacher and, you know, what is causing them, you know, not to be motivated or maybe not want to, you know, work with students anymore. But, you know, we need to really provide those interventions early and make sure that teachers have that level of support. But I think in those situations when you do have teachers that may need to be removed from a classroom, you know, definitely is a process, but, you know, there are ways to make that happen. It's not our first choice to be able to do those things. Our first choice is really to go in and work with teachers and really make sure we have the right conditions in place. And I think going back to our ACE program, I think one of the things that we learned is that those conditions are not just about the teachers and how effective they are. It's also around the conditions of the staff and the culture itself, because we have found that, you know, you need to have a really strong leader who really believes, you know, in building culture and really developing the sense that teachers can feel valued and trusted. You need to have teachers working together. You need to have that parent engagement and people really all on the same page. And I believe that the more that we're able to create those type of learning environments, we'll have less and less teachers who may not want to continue doing their work.
This is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. Let's go back to the phones now. This time we have Connie calling from Garland. Hi, Connie.
Hello.
Hi, go right ahead, please.
Okay. I'm a Baylor graduate, 1972, veteran teacher, 38 years. Started out in special ed, elementary, retired high school ESL. I'm also bilingual. And my recommendation is that beginning teachers go ahead and get a certification in special ed of some sort and get the certification for ESL. Even if you're not going to teach in that exact classroom, you're going to have those students in your classroom. So my background and experience found that many regular classroom teachers, they're always asked to work with special needs or limited English speakers.
Does that sound like good advice to all of you?
I think certification is right. I think that's a step in the right direction. I think back to the notion of clinical practice, though. We need to really extend our opportunities to give teacher candidates exposure to different environments where we have different types of learners. So it's not just about being in one classroom necessarily for a semester or a year, but really doing clinical bursts in the community, work where we've got different types of learners, for example, in language learning environments, special education. But I do agree, though, that really providing teachers with a broader frame of reference above and beyond a particular content area is wise.
What does it take to make teaching seem cool to, high school students who are considering what they might study in college and beyond?
We've been spending a lot of time thinking about that question, particularly with the launch of Teach DFW Today, which is the region-wide recruitment campaign. I think first it starts with just how do we talk about the profession? How do we talk about it in a way that both doesn't make it feel like a disparaging career or a career where you can't find personal fulfillment? And so we are really trying to elevate the stories of teachers who, as I mentioned at the beginning, are doing heroes work and really giving them a voice and a platform to share the remarkable opportunities that they have as a teacher. I think the other is what we're finding in a lot of our focus groups with aspiring teachers or students that are graduating from high school is that sort of this generation of graduating high school students is looking for jobs where they're going to be able to be creative, they're going to be able to advance in their career, they're going to be able to be entrepreneurial, and most importantly, where they're going to be able to lead. So one of the things that we're really trying to better understand, to work with our district partners with, but also in our recruitment campaign to emphasize is that teaching is an amazing opportunity to lead, both lead the students that you engage with every day, lead the faculty that you get to work with, and also lead in your community, and really trying to sell it from that angle in a way that is both authentic and real, but also a very different picture of teaching than I think traditionally we have painted as a society.
And I say this morning I was at the launch of Teach DFW, and there was one of the chief, I forget his exact titles, like educational evangelist from Google. And I really loved the question that he was posing to both teachers and students, because traditionally we ask students, what do you want to be? What do you, when you grow up? And, students will name something. But what he posed was the questions like, what problem do you want to solve? Hmm. And I think for me, to make teaching cool and make people want to do that is come into the field and help us problem solve. Help us figure out how we make this society a better place to be. Help us figure out how we can make better outcomes for students. Help us figure out what we can do to make a difference in this world.
Ivan Duran is Deputy Superintendent of the Dallas Independent School District. John Gasco is Dean of the School of Education at the University of North Texas, Dallas. Kelly Kovacic is Director of Regional Initiatives for the Commit Partnership. It's been a pleasure to speak with all of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker. Shelley Canavy is our technical director. Samantha Guzman is associate producer. And Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at KERA Think. Subscribe to the podcast and find out about upcoming shows at think.kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.